Levaya.
Om Lokam Te Vasudevaya. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Svagatam. Bo maha bhaga swagatam bo maha bhaga swagatam bo maha bhaga priyam king karavani va priyam king karavani va Swagatam bo mahabhaga Priyam king karavaniva Vrajasya namayam kachid Vrajasya namayam kachid Vrajasyanamayam kachit Brutagamana Karanam Brutagamana Karanam Brutagamana Karanam Vrajasyanamayam kachit Brutagamana Karanam Bhagavan Uvacha Svagatam Bo Mahabhaga Priyam King Karavaniva Rajasyamayam Kachid Brutagamana Karanam Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Suagatam, welcome, va, unto you, Mahabhagaha, O most fortunate. Almost fortunate ladies. Priyam, pleasing. Kim, what? Karavani, may I do? Va, for you. Vrajasya, of Vraja. Namayam, the well-being. Kachit, weather. Bruta. Please tell. Agamana. For your coming. Karanam. Reason. Translation of purport. Lord Krishna said, O most fortunate ladies, welcome. What may I do to please you? Is everything well in Braja? Please tell me the reason for your coming here. Please repeat. Lord Krishna said, O most fortunate ladies, welcome. What may I do to please you? Is everything well in Braja? Please tell me the reason for your coming here. So we see here that Krishna, he's just been playing his enchanting flute, and actually there's a chapter, I can't remember if it was after this one, before or after this one, it talks about Krishna's, the enchanting nature of Krishna's flute, and how it's, people, when they hear the sound of his flute, find it completely intoxicating. Can we turn this down just a little bit, squealing there. How the residents of Vrindavan, not just the residents of Vrindavan, actually, that anyone who hears the sound of Krishna's flute, finds it completely intoxicating. So the gopis have heard Krishna's flute playing, and Krishna has been calling them to come with his flute playing. He's been calling them to come into the forest of Braj. And here, Krishna's teasing them. He's just saying to them, he says, well, what do you come here for? What's your reason? And it's very interesting because it's described how, you know, he knew the reason they were coming there. He called them. It's natural. But he's saying, but what are you doing here in the forest in the dead of night? There's so many dangerous animals and you know, what are your parents going to think? What are your relatives going to think? What are your husband's going to think? What about your children? You know, a chaste wife shouldn't do such things like this. I mean, such words, you know, and the gopis is just becoming, it's kind of interesting because Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, especially the next verse, he explains that in verse 19, how if you break up the words in a different way, it means something completely different. Yeah? So Krishna's, in one sense, he's discouraging them. He's saying, why did you come here? You shouldn't have come. It's not a fit place for the ladies to be. And in the next verse, he starts off with Rajani. So Rajani means night, but it also means there's a particular type of jasmine that grows at night called Rajani. Yeah? And he's saying to them, did you come here at night to pick flowers? You know, he's saying, what do you pick the night growing flowers? There's a particular type of jasmine that only flowers at night. And he's just teasing them in so many different ways. But in the same way, he's also encouraging them. In Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, if you break the verse in a different way, you get a completely different meaning. But here in this verse on discussion today, he's just saying, you know, please tell me the reason for your coming here. He's just saying, well, that's a surprise to me. What are you doing here? So the acharyas, they explain this in a very interesting way. He's saying that in interactions between a lover and a beloved, if the man is very forthright, you know, they both understood why they're there. You know, there's no doubt about it. You know, there's no. But if the man just comes out straightforward, you know, straight out in his conjugal interaction with a woman, they don't like that. Yeah? They like to have some, you know, play. They like to, you know, just mess around a little bit. It makes it more interesting, makes it more flavoursome, I guess is the right way of describing it. So here Krishna, he's teasing them in order to make the relationship sweeter. And we see that Krishna, he's very fond of this type of teasing business. There's one story. My wife and myself have a very dear friend in Vrindavan, Dadu. He's quite a character, actually. Dadu is, you know, he's a gentleman. He's a very nice person. Yeah. He's been there for 17 or 18 years in Vrindavan. Everyone calls him Mail Dadu because he delivers the mail to everyone. Yeah, he's been there for a long time, and he knows that many interesting stories. So he put a little book out some time ago. And it's, you know, only about 20 pages, so quite a small book. And in the book, there's one story he tells about when Lord Shiva was getting married. He invited Lord Vishnu to come to his wedding. So, as you know, Lord Shiva, he has many serpents wrapped around his body in various ways. And he also has, he wears a lion's skin around his waist. And the belt for that lion skin is a snake. So he invited Lord Vishnu to come, and of course, as we all know, who's Lord Vishnu's carrier? And what does Garuda eat? Snakes. So when he came, when Lord Vishnu arrived on Garuda, all Lord Shiva's snakes got scared and went away, including the one that was around his waist. Yeah? And so his lion skin fell, tiger skin fell down. And Lord Vishnu knew this was going to happen. So he's like this. He really likes to engage in games and tricking people and things like that. And we see the same thing when later on, we'll read in this 10th canto, when Lord Krishna was in Dwarka, and one time he was teasing Rukmini. And he was saying, well, I don't know why you married me. I'm such a, you know, no one knows my caste. You know, you could have married, Shishupal, you know, and he's you know, a great Kshatriya and things like that, and he's just teasing like this. And, you know, like, oftentimes Krishna, he does these teasing things to try and, you know, get some banter going between him and his beloved. But Rukmini, that's not her nature. She's a very quiet. Whereas Satyabhama, if he had tried that with Satyabhama, he would have had a fight on his hands, you know, because she's got a very fiery nature. And so with Rukmini, she just sort of put her head down and became sadder and sadder and sadder, you know, and she just burst into tears. And actually, she fainted. You know, she was so mortified by Krishna's teasing that she just didn't. But Krishna was finding this very, very enjoyable. You know, so same thing here. He's engaging in this banter with the gopis. He knows exactly what they're doing there. It's not like he's, you know, oh, geez, I didn't expect you guys to come here. I was just here playing my flute on my own, and, well, lo and behold, look who's come. No, he knew exactly what was going on. They also knew the reason they were there. Yet the gopis, being in this, like, humble, shy sort of, they're very shy people, they just didn't say anything. And we see that Krishna goes on for quite a few verses here, and he's just teasing them. And then, like, in verse 22, he says, okay, now you can go back to the cowherd village. You've come and seen me. Off you go. You know? Then a few verses after that, the gopis actually respond, quite a few verses after that. They're saying their heads hanging down and their heavy sorrowful breaths drying up their reddened lips. The gopis scratch the ground with their toes. Tears flowing from their eyes, carrying their kajal and washing away the vermilion smeared on their breasts. Thus they stood silently bearing the burden of their unhappiness. So Krishna's just purposely teasing them, and they're just crying. And then they respond to him saying, it's like, why are you speaking to us like this? You know why we've come here, you know? And he's saying, you should go back to your babies and your husband and things like that. And then they respond to him, it's actually, you are the supreme person. You are actually everyone's husband. And so they're very, you know, they haven't acted improperly. Like, some people may read these pastimes and think, well, you know, why have they responded like this? Because they're married to someone else, and they've come in the dead of night to enjoy with Krishna. But actually, the gopis understand. You know, even though they may not be very philosophical people, and we see that, generally speaking, in Braj, that the people are not very philosophical or speaking great philosophy, but they understand within the core of the heart what is the right thing for them to do. They understand that they are Krishna's, you know, eternal service, that Krishna is their most beloved person, and there is no greater joy in their life than to satisfy Krishna. And we see by pastimes like this and many other pastimes that are there in the Bhagavatam that the gopis, that they'll give up their very lives for the satisfaction of Krishna. So this is the highest essence of devotional service, is they'll sacrifice their self, they'll sacrifice their well-being, they'll sacrifice their prestige, they'll sacrifice everything they have for the pleasure of Krishna. And these are very instructive pastimes, because then we can take this and look at ourselves and think, how much are we prepared to sacrifice for the pleasure of Krishna? And if you analyze it, I mean, I'm particularly talking about myself, you know. If I analyze it in terms of what the gopis are giving up, I'm not prepared to sacrifice very much at all. And I maybe you'll find, if you analyze yourself, you'll also find that, you know, how much are you really prepared to give up for Krishna? Will you give up your prestige in society? Will you give up your, you know, your name, fame? You know, do you mind that people call you bad names because of your, you know, surrender to Krishna? Do you mind that you lose everything? Do you mind your family gives you up? You know, just as, oh, this person's a divorcee, reject them completely. Your wives, your husbands, your children, they just reject you. Some devotees do go through this. Some devotees become rejected by their families because of their surrender to Krishna. And even there was one devotee, Giriraj Maharaj. His father, very wealthy person, he offered him $1 million. I said, here's a blank check, I'll write $1 million on it, it's yours, if you just give up this Krishna consciousness. He said, Father, keep your check. How many of us would do that? You know, if someone was actually offering us $1 million right there, just to give up this Krishna consciousness. So these are the types of tests that you know, devotees will be confronted with in devotional service. They will be tested in so many different ways to actually see how determined we are in the process of Krishna consciousness. And Krishna, he's testing the gopis' determination here, because he spoke exactly the same words to the wives of the brahmanas. You know, I think it's about two or three verses down. He's explaining to them, is actually, you know, the way to please me is by following the regular principles of devotional service, by worshipping the deity in the temple, etc., etc. He goes, when he explained that to the wives of the Brahmanas, they went back to their husbands. Huh? Now he's explaining the same type of points here to the gopis, and they're just like, you know, they put their heads down, and they're, why are you doing this to us? You know, you're the Lord of our lives. There's nothing else for us but you. So this is the essence of this, the highest form of bhakti. And we see, just like before we started class this morning, we're chanting that verse, what's that one? Asrisya vabhidatatam pinashtamam adashtamam amatam kurotuva yatata vabhidatata vabhidatata lampato matparastuva saiva naparaha. This is, I know no one but Krishna is my Lord. And even if he handles me roughly by his embrace or tramples me, you know, and leaves me broken hearted. Yeah. And there's an interesting word in there these are actually prayers from, you know, this one's a prayer from Srimati Radharani. It's not an ordinary prayer, it's not something that Lord Chaitanya made up himself. This is actually a prayer of Radharani. And she's saying that, you know, this word lumpato means you're a debauchee. Yeah. It actually means very low grade, you know, person. So she's saying to Krishna, actually, I can see that you're just a debauchee. Yeah. Because, I mean, look, you know, he's out here in the forest in the middle of the night, you know, having relationships with somebody else's wives. You know, all these girls are married to somebody else and not his wives. Well, not, you know, externally, not in the, you know, the socially acceptable view of things. But we see that actually there are many different things that have happened here. Like a few chapters ago, when Krishna stole the gopis' clothes, and then he forced them to come out of the water. And you know, stand naked before him. And he's just playing with them. He says, "Oh, you know, you've offended, because they're trying to cover themselves up as they're coming out to get their clothes." And he says, "You've offended the demigods by bathing here naked, so you must offer your respects to them." And so they're like this, you know, trying to offer their respects. And he says, "No, you've got to put your hands above your head like this." You know? So he's constantly teasing them like this. And you know, for these young women, they come from very good families. They're not like, you know, in this day and age, in a place like Australia or America or England, like, generally speaking, young ladies, not very high moral standards. And I'm sure we've experienced this in our interactions in society. People don't have very, very high moral standards in this day and age. But here, we see that these girls, they come from very, very respectable backgrounds. They're very cultured people. They know what are the proper standards, proper moral behaviour, etc. And even for a young girl to be alone with a man at night, that's one thing. But for a young girl even to talk to a brahmachari, to a young single man, was just unheard of. Yeah? Yet the gopis, because of their love for Krishna, they were prepared to give up everything just for Krishna's satisfaction. Yeah? So they'd even stand before him with no clothes, and they come to him in the dead of night in the forest. Yeah? Of course, this is quite commonplace these days. You know, there's so many that they actually, in the society, they have these clubs, nightclubs, etc., where people can go and meet, you know, in you know, not very nice, you know, they sell alcohol, they have, you know, some of these places they have, you know, women dancing with very few clothes on, and just all these different types of stuff, you know, this, you know, tamasic music they play, and you know, the whole environment is established in order to facilitate these lusty dealings. And so in modern society, this is considered very good, that people are meeting like this. Oh, they must have had a very nice time, and you know, they actually glorify it. They have shows about it on the television, they talk about it in the newspaper, they talk about it in the magazines, they write books about it and glorify it as being, you know, wonderful activities. Yet, in the cultural environment that this was taking place in, this type of activity was considered to be the lowest, most reprehensible activity you could do, is to just go out and for a young girl to go out and have interactions with a young unmarried man, a brahmachari. And we see that even in there's a story in the Krishna book where there was these princesses being captured by an asura called Bhomasura. He actually captured 16,100 princes and imprisoned them for a long time. I don't know if it mentions how long they were imprisoned for, but it was quite a long time. And in the Vedic culture, it's considered that that if a girl spends one night out of a home, her father will not have her back in the house, and no one will marry her. So what happened was Krishna, he defeated Bhamasura, and he liberated all the princes. He said, okay, you can go home now. And they all just stood there with their heads down. You know, same sort of thing as the gopis. It's like, you know, we can't go home. You know, we've been out of the home for more than one night, and our fathers won't have us back. No one will marry him. And he said, so what do you want me to do? He said, we want you to marry us. He said, okay, come on, let's go. So he married all of them, 16,100 wives. And it's explained by the acharyas. It's not just like, you know, he was just one Krishna, he married 16,000 women. Because, you know, like, normal people think, oh, he's such a lusty person. Look, he's got 16,108 wives. So lusty, you know. I mean, how much is this guy enjoying? You know? That's how normal people will think. Yet we see that Krishna, he accepted 16,100 wives at that time. And he built 16,100 palaces for them. And you just imagine if he spent one night with each wife, how many times would the wife get to see him in his lifetime? Huh? There's like 365 nights in a year. It's a long time before he gets back to the same one again. Huh? It's like 50 years. Huh? Well, no, he didn't do that. He manifested himself every night. He'd leave the Sudama assembly hall, and then he'd manifest himself in 16,108 forms. And then he'd go and into the palace and be with his wives. So then if someone can do something like that, then okay, they can have that many wives. You know, but Krishna, he can easily maintain. And it's not like he's doing it out of lust that he's marrying so many girls. No, he's doing it in order to encourage them in relationship with him, in order for them to develop a relationship with him. So in the same way we see here with the gopis, he's acting in such a way as to increase their love for him. You know, he's teasing them like this. He's saying, well, you know, why did you come here? He's wanting to say to him, you know, we came here because you are our worshipful Lord. There's nothing more important in our lives than you. And they're proving it by their actions. So these pastimes are very nice for us to read and also to understand, to study. To understand the nature of the gopis' love. And actually it's very interesting because Prabhupada would say that for those who are affected by lust in this material, it's interesting because he did say two different things. He said that people who are very lusty shouldn't read these pastimes. Yeah, that's the first thing he said. Because we find what often happens, especially for non-devotees, what often happens, they may present themselves as being devotees, but they're actually non-devotees because they think the whole thing's very cheap. Yeah? And what often happens with non-devotees, particularly, you know, sahajya type of people, is they read these pastimes in order to incite their lusty desires, in order to become sexually agitated. And you know, like in Australian society, we have a similar type of thing. People don't read the Bhagavatam; they just go get a Playboy magazine or whatever these different magazines are they read, you know, and they look at those, and those incite their lusty desires. They read some, you know, my mother used to read these Mills and Boons books, you know, all these like soppy love stories, you know. So they just like read all these types of books just in order to agitate their mind so they become more disturbed in this way. Yet we see the pastimes of Krishna with the cowherd girls and his intimate associates like this are not ordinary lusty dealings. Krishna's not an ordinary lusty boy. I mean, how many young men do you know who can manifest himself in hundreds and thousands of forms to enjoy with his intimate devotees? You know, and Prabhupada describes, I was listening to a class yesterday where he was talking about this, and he was saying that in the material world, this sex attraction is the highest thing. Therefore, when Krishna's engaging in these types of activities, you think, oh, this is the highest. Yet we see in the spiritual world, sex attraction is considered to be the lowest thing. It's not so important. It's not so much importance or significance placed upon it. And Prabhupada was saying in this class that actually he says in the spiritual world there is no sex. Yet still we see here they're engaged in very intimate dealings. And a lot of it is you see, like if you read the Acharya's commentaries in the next verse, Sridhar Maharaj is quoted from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and he's quoting, like he's saying, you know, reading between the lines, he's quoting the conversation, the backward and forward conversation that may be going on between the gopis and Krishna, this like teasing conversation. And we see like this sweetness, the rasa, the emotions that are brought out by these conversations and by the interactions are just increasing, deepening the devotee's love for Krishna more and more and more. And also deepening Krishna's affection. It's not just a one-way thing. It's not that Krishna is just trying to deepen the devotee's love for him. No, Krishna's love for the devotee is deepening also more and more. And this is the nature of the relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's not a static thing. It's not that just, oh, I love Krishna and that's it, doesn't go anywhere from there. Or vice versa, he loves me because he's God and, you know, he loves all his, you know, he says, Samahamsa, that I'm equal to everyone, you know, I envy no one, you know. He explains that I, you know, equal to all. Yet we see that, and he says, but whoever's a devotee of me is in me and I'm, you know, what's that verse? Samahamsa, who's a number of devotees, the Abhijanti, that I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone, I am equal to all. But whoever is surrendered to me is in me and I am in them. He explains that in the Gita, that for one who actually takes shelter of him, they're special to him. So we see that the relationship with Krishna is not a static thing, it actually is something that grows from both sides. You know, the devotee's love for Krishna grows more and more. As the devotee has these interactions with Krishna, the love is growing. And also Krishna's love is also growing for the devotee. And we see that with relationships, especially with the gopis here in Vrindavan, is that they're just experiencing greater and greater love for each other all the time. So as we were describing, is Prabhupada explains that you know, certain people, they should not read these pastimes because it just agitates their mind by lusty desires. You know, so if someone is very lusty, then they should avoid reading these pastimes. Yet if someone is affected by material lust, Prabhupada also says that they should carefully study these pastimes of Radha and Krishna and the gopis and the growers of Vrindavan, because this will help them to placate these lusty desires so they can actually become fixed in this love of Krishna. And then in this class also, I was listening to yesterday, Prabhupada was quoting from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and he was explaining the difference between love and lust. So love or prema means that when Krishna's senses are being satisfied, when Krishna's senses are being served, then this is an aspect of prema. Yet when my senses are being served, then this is karma, this is lust. So we see the difference here. It's like the gopis are not engaging in these pastimes for their own satisfaction. You know? How is it satisfying to them? They've just given up their family connection completely. Which in that situation, you know, anyone who comes from an Indian background knows that this family relation is considered to be very, very, you know, important and a vital thing. You know, like most young men you meet in India, it's quite rare to find brahmacharis in India. You do find brahmacharis, but they're quite rare because in India it's considered that the goal of a person's life is to get married. This is a very, very important thing, you know, because the family, they want to have the heirs, they want to have, you know, the male children to liberate them, etc. like this, you know, it's very important in Indian society. Yet, we see here they're giving up, you know, all these social connections in order to satisfy Krishna. It's not to satisfy themselves. So we see this is just, you know, if we understand from the explanations of the acharyas, you know, Krishnadas Kaviraj explains that, you know, when it's directed at satisfying the senses of Krishna, then this is prema. So we can understand by these dealings of the gopis that this is prema. This is not some ordinary mundane dealing where people are just out in the middle of the night trying to, you know, engage in mutual self-satisfaction, which is essentially what relationships in this material world are all about, is mutual self-satisfaction. You know, in essence, it means you're just trying to satisfy yourself. You couldn't really care less whether the other person is satisfied or not. That is just, you know, if they get satisfied, well, good luck to them. You know? But as long as I'm satisfied, then this is what it's all about. You know? And this is dealings in the material world. Is everyone is just simply focused on satisfying the senses. And the mutual aspect of it is they're both trying to satisfy their own senses. They're not interested in satisfying the other person's senses. And we see that in material relationships, when the satisfaction of the senses ceases, when it becomes unpalatable, then the relationship ceases. But here we see the gopis becoming very, very disturbed by Krishna. You know, they're bowing their heads down, they're scratching the ground with their toes, they're crying. I mean, torrents of rain, you know, and it says that, you know. What does Lord Chaitanya say? This is the seventh verse. Nayam garud ashradharaya. The torrents of tears are just flowing from my eyes because I'm feeling so much separation from you. You know, Lord Chaitanya is expressing all these different emotions. He's taking up this mood of Srimati Radharani. Actually, it's quite easy for him because he is a manifestation of Srimati Radharani. And he's just expressing these emotions of Radharani that she's experiencing in relationship with Krishna. And we see here in this chapter that Krishna puts them through the whole gamut of emotions. You know, he's teasing them now. And they become very disturbed. And then he engages in conjugal relationship with them. And then they become a little proud. So what happens? He disappears. And he goes off with Radharani. And they're all thinking, oh, you know, where's he gone? And then they're following, they notice there's two sets of footprints on the ground. And they notice that one's, you know, one's male, one's a female. And they go, oh, who's that fortunate gopi that Krishna's gone off with? She must be so dear to him. And they're going on like this. And then they're noticing that one set of footprints disappears and the other set, the man's footprints become deeper. Oh, she must be tired and he's picked her up and carrying her. And they're just like so absorbed in meditating and on Krishna's activities and his pastimes. Yeah? So Krishna, and then Radharani, she also becomes proud thinking that, oh, I'm the only one who's with Krishna. So what happens? Krishna leaves her sitting on the ground too and disappears. Yeah? So he's putting them all through these different emotions. And then even they're running around, they're going mad, just completely out of their minds looking for Krishna. Yeah? Just imagine. I've seen this happen many times. Well, not many times, but I've seen it happen. You know, Kripa Sindhu, if you lost your baby, how would you feel? You would just go mad out of your mind looking for him everywhere. Huh? And so they're the same. They're like this for Krishna. They're just going mad, looking everywhere for Krishna. And then Narayan manifests himself and they go, oh, my dear Narayan. You know, they're offering their obeisance because the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Where's Krishna? And then he's like, you know, four arms, he's pointing in four different directions and like that. And then Srimati Radharani comes, you know, because Krishna's playing a trick on them again. He comes, she comes before Narayan, and she's asking him, where's Krishna? And because Krishna has such affection and love for Radharani, he can't hold this form of Narayan. So he's kind of like, you know, flashing backwards and forwards between Narayan and Krishna, and then you know, the game's up, they realize it's Krishna playing a trick on them. Yeah? So we see that Krishna here, he's putting them through all these different emotions simply to increase the love, simply to experience, not just to increase the love, but also to experience the love. He wants to experience this feeling for them also. Yet we see that he can't fully understand the love that the gopis have for him. Especially one particular gopi, Srimati Radharani. He cannot understand her love for him. Therefore, it's described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the beginning of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It gives six reasons for Lord Chaitanya's appearance. It gives three external reasons and three internal reasons, and I never can remember them. It's just, I'm very bad with these sorts of things. I can remember my name, I can remember where I live. These simple things are okay, but when it comes to philosophy, it gets a little bit harder. Yet, one of the internal reasons, you know, external reasons are things like, you know, the Yuga Dharma, the chanting of Hare Krishna, he also came out to teach how to, you know, live his life as a perfect person, things like that. Yet, one of the internal reasons he came was to try to understand the love that Srimati Radharani feels for him. Therefore, he manifests himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead with this mood of love that Srimati Radharani experiences. And we see that when he's in Puri, particularly when he's staying in the Gambira, that he was experiencing this mood of Vipralamba Bhava, this mood of separation, and he was entering into this mood of Srimati Radharani and experiencing this emotion that Krishna puts the gopis through in order to understand more the mood and the love of the gopis. So we see that this is actually a very, very deep and intimate understanding, and many people that they cheapen this thing and they think it's just, you know, just some lusty arrangement. You know, of course we see that, you know, if in this society we live in, if a person had 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 wives, What would people think of them?
Different responses. Some people think they're very fortunate.
And some people think, oh, they're just really degraded people. Just like, you know, there was a president in America not so long ago, and he was having affairs with all sorts of women. And the general public mood, even though people in high positions were decrying, oh, this is outrageous, you know, he should be removed from position, etc. Of course, the opposition always says that, just like you hear here in Victoria. You know, anything that the people in power do, the opposition party says, oh, they should resign. They should be removed from office. You know, they're just trying to get them out so they can get into office, really. It's got nothing to do with whether their behaviour is bad or not, because they're doing exactly the same things. And they'll probably do worse when they get into power. Yet so many people were saying that, oh, you know, this president should be removed. But then they did they do these opinion polls. And so they did an opinion poll amongst all the men in America. And they think, oh, yeah, that's a good thing. Yeah, they thought it was a really good thing. Why? Because they want to do the same thing and not have their wife say anything to them. That's exactly why, because they just want to do exactly the same thing. Because it's low-class behaviour. And they're low-class people. They think, well, if I do this, my wife's going to beat me on the head with a stick. Yeah? But his wife's supporting him, saying, oh, this is, you know, it's okay, he's a good man. They want their wives to say the same thing. So you'll see that if people in this society had many wives, then generally speaking, they'd be criticised as being debauchees and you know, lusty and low class and, you know, etc. like that. Yet some people would think it was a good thing. Yeah? But and so when they look at Krishna, oftentimes you see people, they look at Krishna and they hear that he's enjoying, you know, he has 16,108 queens. He has, he goes into the forest at night and he dances with thousands upon thousands upon thousands of young girls in the middle of the night. And they just say that this is just lusty dealings of a lusty young boy. And it's very interesting. There's one particular group of Vaishnavs, so I guess you could call them Vaishnavs, in India, who worship Bal Gopal. You know, there's this form of Lal Gopal, baby Krishna. And some of them, not saying all of them, but some of them rationalize this worship, and they say, we worship Bal Gopal because this is before Krishna became, this is before he became affected by the lust of the rasa dance. So this is Krishna in his pure sense. Yeah? So this is completely bogus philosophy, because Krishna is always Krishna. He's always pure, no matter what he's doing, no matter what form he takes. Just like we see, you know, when Krishna manifested himself as a baby, he killed Putana, he killed Trinavarta. Just the same. I mean, you see, like Krishna, he gets carried up in the air by this huge demon, Trinavarta, and he just, like, with his tiny baby hands, this huge, gigantic demon the size of a mountain grabs him round the neck and throttles the life out of him. He's just a baby, like this big, you know, he's still just crawling in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. Putana, same thing. Doesn't even strangle her, just sucks on her breast and just sucks the very life out. So no matter what form Krishna takes, he is always the complete original Supreme Personality of Godhead, with no limitations, with no contamination. It doesn't matter what form he takes, he's always Krishna. Whether he's a baby Krishna, whether he's a youth Krishna, you know, 16 years old or whatever, or whether he's 125 years old on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He's always Krishna, full and complete. So here, these pastimes, they're considered to be the highest pastimes of Krishna, where he's experiencing the greatest love with his greatest devotees. His most intimate devotees, the devotees who are prepared to give up their very lives for the satisfaction of Krishna. And they're very inspiring for us. Not that we should think that we should be enjoying the same way with Krishna, because this is not, you know, this is not an appropriate thing. It is that, you know, oh, I'm going to become a gopi. This is actually, you know, considered the sahajas, they feel like that. And you'll see them in Vrindavan. I think we spoke about this last class ago. You see they dress up in saris, you know, and thinking that by imitating they'll become. And you see them in Vrindavan, in the temple, more in Vrindavan. You see them in Mayapur a bit, but not so much. But in Vrindavan you see them become, they dress in saris, they manifest these so-called ecstatic symptoms, you know, and they roll on the ground backwards and forwards, and, you know, just all sorts of strange behaviour. And they think that this is going to help them, you know, enter into this intimate association or intimate pastime with Krishna. Yet, they lack the prerequisite purity. They lack this necessary qualification of being pure without any material contamination.
Because we see, you know, the gopis, they have no material desires. They haven't gone to the forest in the middle of the night to enjoy sex life or anything, you know, debauched with Krishna. They've gone there simply to satisfy Krishna. They have no other desire than to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is what it means when we have no material desires. It means we have no desire for ourselves. We only have desires to please Krishna. We only have desires to serve Krishna or to serve Krishna's devotees. So the gopis are exhibiting this highest surrender and giving us guidance on what we need to achieve in order to achieve this love for Krishna. We need to give up all material desires, give up all thoughts of satisfying the self, give up all thoughts of extended self-satisfaction, meaning for family, for country, nation, you know, humanity, all this type of stuff. You know, give up all these things and just act for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in this way, this is the way to enter into these pastimes, not to, you know, just like imitate, dress up in the clothes and you know, imitate the behavior and have girlfriends and things like that. Like you see with the Sahajas, they do that. They have sometimes many girlfriends. They have these, there's this group called Saki Bekis. It's actually, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he identified 13 major upper sampradayas. You know, an upper sampradaya means, but essentially means that they're presenting themselves as being bona fide Vaishnavas. They don't follow any philosophy. They're just pretending. They're just imitating. So they dress themselves up as sakis. You know, Saki Beki means they're wearing the clothes of the sakis and the behavior. And they're pretending to be gopis. And they imitate the behavior. You know, and they have girlfriends and boyfriends and all these types of things. And you know, engage in illicit sex and all sorts of things, pretending to be like Krishna, pretending to be like the gopis, and thinking that this is going to give them this highest relationship. Yet all it gives them is bondage in the material world. Is that Krishna says that in Yagnata Kamana Nyatra Loko Yang Kamabandana. He said, if they're not doing it for the satisfaction of Krishna, and what is their motivation? They want to become gopis. That's self-motivation. I mean, maybe they're targeting, you know, the supreme devotees, but they want to become gopis. Why? So they can enjoy lusty relationships with Krishna. Not to please Krishna. That's not their motivation. It's the same as we see, like, you know, different yogis. You know, they practice the yoga asanas, etc. like this. Why? So they can become liberated. So Krishna's Kaviraj, he says the same thing about this. He says they're all lusty. He says, Krishna Bhakta Niskama Ata Eva Shanta Bhukti Mukti Siddhikami Sakali Ashanta. He says, like, the bhuktis, the people who are looking after sense enjoyment. Muktis, those who are looking for liberation. Siddhis, those who are after material perfections. They're all kami, they're all lusty. Why? Because they're following the spiritual path, the so-called spiritual path, simply for their own personal satisfaction. Their motive is not to please Krishna. Their motive is to achieve some perfection. Whether it's like some material perfection or some so-called spiritual perfection by achieving liberation or one of the, you know, Asta Siddhis. You know, like Agima, Lagima, you know, Anima, all these different things, you know, Praptisha, you know, all these different things. They're still just trying to, you know, so, and the thing is that many people misidentify these types of yogis as being on the spiritual path, but they're not. In the essence, this is what the gopis are doing. This is the true spiritual path. You know, what these people are doing is they're simply trying to improve their position. They want to be liberated. They want to have some material perfection. They want to go to the planets of the demigods. All these different types of things. This is what they're chasing. Therefore, Krishna's Kaviraj says, Kami. He says, they're all lusty. Everybody says, he explains, he says, Krishna Bhakta Niskama. He has no material desires. Niskama. Atta eva shanta. Therefore he's peaceful. You see, the devotees of Krishna are peaceful. They have no material desires. They have no want for themselves. And this brings about their peace. Krishna establishes the same thing in the Gita. He says, Bhaktaram yagatapasam, sarvalok maheshram, suridam sarvabhutam, gyatvamam shantim richati. He says, if you understand me, let's say, you know, you understand John Howard, or understand, you know, the President of America, or understand this thing or that thing. And he says, if you understand, he says, Gyatva Mam, thus knowing me, Shanti Mrishati, he said, you'll attain peace. If you understand that I am the enjoyer, that I am the controller and proprietor, and I am the real friend, then you'll attain peace. So the gopis have accepted Krishna in this way. They've accepted that he is everything. There's nothing else in their lives but Krishna. They've accepted this. Holy. Not just, oh, it's a good idea. Like we read the Bhagavatam or we read the Gita. That's pretty good. Yeah, like Prabhupada's purport. But do we do it? Do we act on it? Or we just read and think, that's a good idea? Prabhupada would sometimes say, he said, my only criticism, actually Prabhupada would say this in different things, but he'd say, sometimes he'd say, my only criticism of my disciples is they don't read the books. So the books are there for us not just to look at or to sell or whatever. The books are there for us to imbibe. Not just even just to read, because we can read the book and not absorb anything. But the books are there for us to imbibe, to take up the knowledge and live the knowledge. And so sometimes Bhaktivedanta Purnamaj, he talks a lot about culture. And his explanation of it, which I personally feel is quite a good sound explanation of it, is culture is a practical manifestation of philosophy. So therefore we can understand by someone's behaviour if they're taking up the philosophy. If we're still behaving like Australians, Ockers or Kiwis or Indians, if we're still behaving in that way, it means we haven't taken up the culture, we haven't taken up the philosophy. The practices of, Prabhupada said this process of Krishna consciousness is for a cultural re-spiritualization for humanity at large. So Prabhupada, he didn't say, this Krishna consciousness movement is for reading the books and taking up understanding the philosophy. He said, no, a cultural re-spiritualization. So it means we take up this spiritual culture. We change our activities. We change the way we think. We change the way we dress. We change what we eat. We change what we do. We change everything. And what do? We center it around Krishna. We put Krishna in the center. That's what Krishna consciousness means. It doesn't mean that, I just wear a dhoti and I put some mud on my face and I'm Krishna conscious. No, it means we change the center of our lives. As we see the gopis here, what's in the center of their lives? It's the only thing in their lives. They have nothing else. They won't even, I think John Underwood was explaining the other day, they're married, but their husbands can't even touch them. The husband's approaching them for conjugal relationships. The husband is like, no. They won't allow their husbands even to touch them. They only have a relationship with Krishna. They've put Krishna in the center of their lives, and therefore their lives have become perfect. So that's all we need to do in our lives. Prabhupada would say, you don't have to change anything. You really don't have to change anything, except in relation to the four regular principles and chanting the holy name. You don't have to change what you're doing. You don't need to give up your job. You can keep doing your job. You can keep, the same family relations you have. You can keep, all these different things. You just change one simple thing. You take the I, me. You take the I out of the center of everything and you put Krishna in the center of everything. And this is Krishna consciousness. Because you just do everything. Krishna says that in the Gita. Yad karoshi yadas nasi yad shuhosi das yad tapasyasi kunteya tad kurusha madarpanam. He says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, you do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. And then in the very next verse he says, suba suba phalayereva moksaseya kamabandhanaya. Thank you. Sanyaso. Sanyasa yoga yuktatma vimukto mam upaisasi. He says, in this way you'll become free from the bondage to work and its various auspicious and inauspicious results. With your mind fixed on me. Notice that he says, with your mind fixed on me. Not anything else. He says, with your mind fixed on Yogi Bear or with your mind fixed on Donald Duck or anything like that. He says, no, with your mind fixed on me in this principle of renunciation. This is what renunciation is. It doesn't mean walking around in a loincloth. And then thinking about, how I'm going to make money, how I'm going to get food, how this, how that. That's not renunciation. That's just the same activities in different dress. And let's face it, in Melbourne at this time of year, who wants to walk around in a loincloth anyhow? It's so cold. No, keep yourself warm. Put sufficient clothes on. Eat sufficiently, Live in a comfortable place. But become a renunciate. And this is what Krishna is preaching to Arjuna in the Gita. He's telling to Arjuna, you become a sannyasi. But he doesn't tell him to get a dunder and wear a loincloth, you know, and become like the Goswamis in Vrindavan. He doesn't tell him to do this. He says, no. You, with your mind fixed on me, this is the renunciation he's talking about. You give up thought for yourself and you simply act according to what I want you to do, not according to what you want to do. Because in the beginning of the Gita, we see that Arjuna, he just wants to act according to his own concept of what he should be doing, according to his own sense gratification and his extended sense gratification. And Prabhupada explains it very nicely. It's because, like, you know, someone goes out and fights, you know, to win a kingdom. What do they want to win the kingdom for? So they can enjoy it with all their friends. Look so much of what I've got. You know, look at my wonderful kingdom. Look at my wonderful palace. Look at all this, all that, you know. It's the same for us. We have these nice houses. Why? You know, why are all these people around here got these wonderful houses? Well, so-called wonderful houses. I mean, if you knew how poorly they were built, you wouldn't think they were very wonderful. No, so they can show them off and invite their friends around and impress their friends. You know, look at, you know, like my wonderful house. Look at these floor-to-ceiling windows, you know, that, you know, all this sort of, you know. They're just trying to impress all their friends. Yeah? But this is the wrong motivation, and this is what Krishna is convincing Arjuna. And right at the end, you know, the essential instruction of the Gita. He says, "Manmanava madbhakto madhyaji mamnasku mamayashi satyante pratijan." Always think of me. Become my devotee. Worship me and offer your homage to me. Krishna's not putting anything else there. He's not saying, you know, do it for this one, do it for that. He's always think, manmana bhava manmana. In your mind, you think of me. Madhyaji, you worship me. Mamnaskuru, you offer your obeisances to me. This is renunciation. Yeah? And as Lord Chaitanya, he preached to that Brahmana. He says, Kiva vipra kibi nasi sudra kena noi ye Krishna tapaveta se guru hoi. It doesn't matter what you're doing. He says, Kiva vipra kibi nasi. It doesn't matter whether you're a Brahmana, a sannyasi, sudra kena noi, or a sudra. It doesn't matter what you are. Ye Krishna tapaveta. This truth of Krishna. You just preach this truth of Krishna. Se guru hoi, you become guru. So Krishna is explaining, it doesn't matter what your position is, you don't have to change anything. You know, like oftentimes we hear boys here in Melbourne that think, oh, you know, in order to be a devotee of Krishna, I have to give up my job and move into the ashram. No, the ashram is not big enough for all of that anyhow, it's only a small house. You know? This is not what Krishna wants you to do. Krishna wants you to give up your perception of yourself. Give up your motivation for satisfying yourself and simply act to serve Him. Simply act to please Him in whatever condition of life you find yourself. This is what Krishna wants you to do. And this is real renunciation. We give up all these perceptions of my own idea of how to please myself. You know, ultimately, it's how to please myself. You know, we may think that I'm acting to become, you know, I'm doing it to please Krishna. But look at whose senses are satisfied by the activity. Yeah? Are you doing what you want to do? Or are you doing what Krishna wants you to do? Yeah? And we all need to do that. It's not just I'm saying to you that this is what you should do. I need to do this also. We all need to do this. At every step of the way, we need to analyze our activities. Yeah? Meditate upon this. You know, what am I doing to please Krishna? Am I doing this for myself? Or am I doing this for Krishna? And the more we can do that, the closer we become to Krishna. It's just a simple thing. You just take the I out of the center of everything and you put Krishna in the center of everything. And this is Krishna consciousness. There's nothing more to it than that. You know, you can be doing so many fancy activities. You can be a guru, you can be a GBC, you can be a temple president, you can be whatever it is. You can be the best pot washer in the world. You know? But if you're not putting Krishna in the center of these activities, then actually it has no value. You can wear dhoti, sari, tilak, all these things, but if you're not putting Krishna in the center, then the activities have no value, and they only lead to bondage. So it's a simple process, and all we have to do is apply it. You know, Prabhupada's made it so easy for us to put Krishna in the center of everything. Our day has been structured in such a way, from the point of time you wake up in the morning to you go to bed at night, everything can easily be centered around Krishna. All it takes is for us to do it. All it takes is for us to say, okay, Krishna, what do you want? How can I serve you? Right? And this is how we achieve our perfection. Okay, so any questions at all? previous interval? Seven or eight. It is mentioned. Actually, no, you're probably right. It's probably eight, because he was 7 years old when he lifted Govardhan Hill. And then the following year, this pastime took place, so he would have been 8 years old. Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur, he describes that. He describes the chronology of the pastimes. Because it happened a year after the following. I think this is the autumn one. The because in India it's still practiced mostly in the village areas, and that the girls are married quite young. And they weren't, you know, like here, you know, you get married in your 20s and 30s. They weren't that old. They were young girls of the same age group as him.
Did they have children?
Some of the like the teenage ones would have, yeah. Yeah. Sorry. Okay, purport. Lord Krishna knew perfectly well why the gopis had come. In fact, he had called them with the romantic melodies of his flute. So Krishna was simply teasing the gopis by asking them, "Why have you come here so quickly? Is something wrong in town?" He was, because Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is explained is, you know, has Indra attacked or something like that. Yeah. "Why have you come here anyway? What do you want?" The gopis were Krishna's young lovers, and therefore these questions certainly bewildered them, for they had responded to Krishna's call with the simple mentality of enjoying conjugal love with him. So he was doing these things to bewilder them. You know, he's just teasing them. And Krishna, I tell you, Krishna is the greatest joker. He does so many things to tease and trick and bewilder people. And he's doing it to us all the time. You know? I remember, you know, when I joined ISKCON, he tricked me. I said, okay, if this happens, I'll come. You know, for years I was, no, I don't want to do this. I like my life, you know. And then he arranged it. You know, what I asked, I said, okay, he arranged it. He said, okay, I told you I'd come, so now I come. And as soon as I came, that was gone. So, I mean, Krishna tricks us. He wants us all to surrender. You know? Because he knows this is what we want. He knows this is what we need. It's just we don't realize that. Because this is actually our nature. This is our constitutional, eternal position. Is a certain jivera surupahoi krishnera nitya das. Not a part-time job. Being a servant of Krishna is not a part-time job. He says, krishnera nitya das. He's an eternal servant of Krishna. That's our position. That's who we are. You may think that I'm a boy, I'm a girl, I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer, I'm this, I'm that. Sorry, that's not what you are. That is an external identification that goes with the body. That's what is called a party by Narad Muni. But actually what you are is a servant of Krishna. That is your identification. And the quicker you realize that, the happier you'll be. Anything else at all? Mataji? Well, obviously they want to be liberated from material suffering. Yet we see, like, you know, Krishna says, you know, four kinds of pious people surrender unto me. Yet you don't stay that way. You don't stay, you know, in material suffering, because as it's described, Rupa Goswami, he describes in the Nectar of Devotion, he says, what's that? Kleshagni, Subhada, Moksha Guru Krishna Atma, and that's the last one. Yeah, it's Kleshagni, and what's the last one?
It's really.
It's, yeah. He's explaining the six things that come. So at the stage of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, the first thing that comes is relief from material distress. So just as soon as we, not just like the day you walk in the door, but as you develop in your practice, then you'll find. I remember before I came to devotional service, I was constantly in distress. The amount of times I contemplated committing suicide, the amount of times I contemplated, just all sorts of stupid things. It was practically a weekly occurrence. It was just my life was miserable. And I'm sure that many of us here have had the same experiences, that before coming to the practice of Krishna consciousness, your life was miserable. But I wouldn't give up my life now for all the gold in the world. I just wouldn't give it up. I mean, sometimes, it's tough, but I still wouldn't give it up. It's just such a wonderful life, to be able to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to come and see Him every day, to chant His holy names, to associate with His devotees. There's nothing nicer. So they are approaching, they do have material aspirations, but they're pious. So that piety puts them in the position where they're able to approach. It doesn't give them the right, but it just makes their proclivity or propensity more disposed towards spiritual life. Whereas impious people, as Krishna says, he outlines the four kinds of impious people that don't approach Him. So they don't have the right proclivity, yet those who have that proclivity, doesn't necessarily, because there are many pious people in this world who never approach God. Yet they still have material afflictions. They're materially distressed. They're after knowledge. They're after wealth. They're looking for, they want to improve themselves materially. And what is, Kunti says, Janmai Shoshudashudi Edamana Navahati Abhidaktum by Tom Kinshan Gosharam. That, she's saying that, my Lord, you can be easily be approached. So easily to approach Krishna. It's not like, if you want to go and approach John Howard, how easy is that? Or the President of America, whenever he goes there, he takes plane loads of security people with him. He takes his own private, bulletproof, bomb-proof armoured car, practically, Like the glass in the windows is over an inch thick. How easy can you prickly just walk up and say, excuse me, I've got a problem with you. Can you go up and talk to him? No way. I mean, it's almost impossible to get to talk to him. And if you do get to talk to him, it's after so many levels of security checks. It's like I was speaking with Nityananda Priya, because he does some software implementation. That's the job that he does. So, not last week, the week before, he was doing software implementation at Boeing. Down in Fisherman's Bend, and he was saying they have to do police checks on him and all this type of stuff. He said until he got the police check clearance, he could not go anywhere in the building without the manager being with him. Even when he went to the toilet, the guy was standing outside the door to make sure he didn't do anything wrong. So it's in some company it's like that. So to imagine to approach a big person the President of America, the Prime Minister of Australia, it's not an easy thing. Yet, Kunti's explaining, my dear Lord, you can easily be approached. It's so easy. He's right there. You just walk up to him and approach him. So easy. He says, but only by those who are materially exhausted. Not for one who's trying to improve themselves in terms of, janma, aishra, shuta, birth, to get a good birth, wealth, shuta, knowledge, sri, beauty, If you're trying to improve yourself in terms of these things, you cannot approach Krishna. But if we're just trying to approach Him, we give up all this material stuff, And that's the same thing for these people in the Gita. It's like, yes, they're pious. So they have this opportunity to approach Krishna, but if they keep after these things, if they keep going after all these material improvements, then they won't actually get Krishna. We need to, at some point, to renounce all that. And we see that with Dhruva Maharaj, his approach was, he approached Krishna and he wanted to achieve a kingdom greater than the kingdom of his grandfather or his great-grandfather. And who was his great-grandfather? Lord Brahma. So he wanted such a great kingdom. And so he was approaching Krishna with these material desires. Yet, there's a verse in the... what's that book? I've forgotten now. It's Sanat Goswami's commentary on the Bhagavatam. Something Toshinam. I can't remember what it's called. Hari Toshinam or something like that. Anyhow, so there's a verse there where he's quoting Dhruva Maharaj, and Dhruva Maharaj says, he says, my dear Lord, you know, I was approaching you, for material gains, you know. Nice analogy is, it's like, yeah, I was searching after pieces of broken glass. Just like you walk down the street here, you know, so many pieces of broken glass on the ground. You know, Sydney's unbelievable. In Sydney, you can't walk around barefoot. There's so much broken glass on the ground. And yet, now that I have achieved the shelter of your lotus feet, I have achieved the most valuable gem. So he was approaching Krishna, looking for, some material facility. Yet, when he actually achieved the lotus feet of Krishna, he realized that this was just useless. So in the same way, to approach Krishna, to satisfy material desires, your material desires may be fulfilled. They may be. But is that really what you want? Do you want to satisfy your material desires? Because Krishna can arrange that for you through the potency of his material energy. He can arrange anything for you. You can become the Prime Minister of Australia. You can become Miss Universe. Mm-hmm. You can become, richer than Bill Gates. You can have more knowledge than Albert Einstein. But will you get Krishna? And become Lord Brahma?
Mm-hmm.
Become Lord Indra? Look at what Lord Indra did in a few chapters ago. Got himself a lot of trouble. But is that really worth having? You can get anything you want in this material world, but do you really want it? And what's the cost? You may get it. What's the cost? If you have to give up your relationship with Krishna, if you have to give up the chance of developing that loving relationship with Krishna, is it worth it? That's what you need to look at. Is it really worth it? Okay, you may get yourself a nice job. You have to work hard day and night, etc., etc. I mean, some people are working, 10 or 12 hours a day. Is that really worth it? Do you have to sacrifice your Krishna consciousness for it? And if you do, then it's not worth it. In my opinion, it's not worth it. It's just not worth it, because there's nothing better in this world or any world than Krishna consciousness. Because that is, the reason there's nothing better, I don't want to sort of diverge too much here, but there's a really interesting, I was thinking the other day, I go up here twice a week for a sauna, and I was talking to a gentleman there the other day, and he was asking me who I was, and I said, I'm a Hare Krishna, and he says, are you God? I said, no, I'm a servant of God. And I almost felt like telling him that actually, it's better to be a servant of God than it is to be God. And if you read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I can't remember if it was the fourth or the fifth chapter of the Adi Leela, Krishnadas Kaviraj establishes how it is a better position to be a servant than it is to be God. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya appears as a servant because it's better. Because God, if you're God, you've got to create and maintain everything. You've got a lot of headache, People are always praying, please give me this, please give me that, like that, Whereas you're the servant. And you see, it's actually the fifth chapter of the Adi Leela. You see that there's only one incarnation or one form of the Lord that is actually takes the mood of God, and that's Krishna himself. Every other incarnation, manifestation, whatever you want to call it, of Krishna, takes the mood of the servant. And Lord Chaitanya himself also comes as a servant to experience that. Because the servant, the position of the servant is higher than the position of God. So this is the most wonderful lifestyle. To be the servant of the Supreme Master. I mean, why give it up? To something else. There is nothing else, really. Okay. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki.